Okay, I can start talking? All right. Okay, if anybody sees me about to, like, kill myself, you know, the front row here, you know, you're on duty. Good morning, and wow, I'm always, like, awed when I see a room this full on a Sunday morning, and it's a fast day, and we all came off of 3 days in Yom Tov, one down, two more to go. So the name of this shiur, which actually is not on the source sheet, and I just realized, like, I think I gave out one of my front covers, but okay, we'll make do. The name of this shiur is called The Dynamic Duos, Love, Us and God, Love and Loyalty, and I'm really bad at making up titles. So there, I realized that I intended a play on words that possibly didn't come out, and that's in the word dynamic, which is not, I'm not just doing a Batman reference here. Sorry, Susan, you know, can tell Shalom, not just the Batman reference, but it's the idea of the dynamic of the two-way, constantly moving back and forth relationship that has to do with us and God and has to do with the dual ways that we relate of love and loyalty. And I would like to invoke the quote from Masechet Sanhedrin, which is, one who gives credit to where one learns words of Torah can hasten the Mashiach, and Lord knows we need that hastened as much as possible. And a lot of what this shi'ur, the foundation of this shi'ur, is actually based on something that I learned from Rabbi Yossi Adler about 30 years ago. So anybody who runs into Rabbi Adler can mention that to him, and it's also kind of awing for me to reflect and very humbling for me to reflect as a teacher that, oh my gosh, maybe 30 years from now somebody will actually remember something that I said, so I really better watch it. Okay. So the sources that I have in front of you are in Hebrew, and they're in Hebrew for a reason, which is so that I can be the one to translate them rather than JPS, Art Scroll, Machon Mamre, whatever, because over the years that I've spent teaching, I've come to realize that translation is a nuanced skill in and of itself. My students know that I'm not a big fan of certain translations and I'm a bigger fan of others, but I'm a little bit biased in that I like the way I translate things the best. So we're going to do it like that. Where we're starting, no pun intended, is actually at the beginning. And what I want to look at is how the Torah describes the two fundamental relationships that a human being has in his or her life. And God, in his truly infinite and really amazing literary wisdom, manages to put both of those relationships into one verse, into one pasuk. And very often when we're reading through Sefer Bereshit, Parsha Bereshit, first of all, you know, again, by the time Simchas Torah is over, we're all kind of brain dead. We've made it through Hakafos. We've made it through 2 out of 3 days. And by the time Shabbat Bereshit rolls around, we don't really focus so much on the depth of Parsha Bereshit. The other thing is that the way education works, we tend to learn Bereshit as children, and we don't revisit it again as adults. So if you have not taken the time to read Parshat Bereshit with adult eyes, I strongly encourage it, because if it's up to me, I don't teach Bereshit until students are seniors, because I think basically between age 6 and age 16 or 17, it's just way too deep and complicated. But since everybody here is over the age of 16 or 17, go back and read it. At the end of Perek Bet, and this is, I believe it's source, again, I'm going to borrow from people. I believe it's source 1, how convenient. At the end of Perek Bet, once Adam and Chava, the first male human and the first female human, or as one of my teachers put it, not actually the first humans, but the first fully developed humans, the first humans who are able to receive prophecy, who are able to conceptualize something that is so far beyond themselves and beyond the concrete, that we in this age of technology and microprocessors and electron microscopes still can't quite put our heads around the concept of the divine. So these humanoids are now fully developed and they are ready to interact with the divine. And God has created a male humanoid, God has created a female humanoid. It's a completely different shiur, how that creation process happens. Right now we have these two humanoids. And God says at the end of Perek Bet, at the end of this second account of creation, Al kein ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo v'davak b'ishto v'hayu l'basar echad. Therefore, a human, and I'm purposely translating the word human here as ish, therefore a human, and in this particular case a male human, shall leave his father and his mother, and he shall enter into the closest possible relationship with his female counterpart, which we tend to call his wife, his ishto, his female ish, v'hayu l'basar echad, and they shall be as one flesh. In this one pasuk, what the Torah sets out is that there are two basic fundamental relationships, and that is the relationship of a person and the parent, father, mother. I'm trying to keep this as gender neutral as I can. Father, mother, and the relationship between a person and their spouse. We've got it in one verse. And at some point in the person's development, the person has to emerge from the relationship, has to actually leave, abandon almost, the relationship that he or she has with his father and his mother, and reestablish a new relationship with a spouse. And the relationship with the spouse is fundamentally of an emotional devak dvekut, which is an emotional and spiritual clinging, a closeness. We think of it very often in terms of our relationship with God. Ba'atem hadvekim ba'ashem chayim kolchem hayom. And you who cling, who cleave to God, are alive today. And there is also a physical component in that relationship, and they shall be as one flesh. Okay? The physical, the intimate, the sexual, however you want to think of it. This is the foundational relationship, and this is the mature relationship. Almost every single reference that is made in the Torah, and particularly in Nevi'im, and we're going to go through the sources primarily in Sefer Yeshayahu, of our relationship with God is either this context or this context. The fundamental difference between this context and this context is this is a context that is based on primarily on what we call the midah from our end, the midah of yira, from the perspective of the child. It's the midah that the Rav calls awe, and awe is a mental recognition that of the inequity of power. Awe is what you feel when you stand at the lip of the Grand Canyon, or you stand at the base of the mountain, or you stand at the edge of the ocean, or something that is so magnificent that it basically renders you silent. It is that, oh my God, sense of how tiny, minuscule, powerless, vulnerable I am in the face of what's there. There's a definite inequity. From the parent end, there is love, but it's specifically a love that's ideally is unconditional. Okay? When my child is born, and my child wakes me up every 45 minutes to eat, and my child, and I am exhausted, and I am frazzled, or when my child is 5 and is having a meltdown, or when my child is 15 and is challenging every boundary, or when my child is 30 and is encountering their own mature life crises, what I feel for my child, if I am a good, quote unquote, if I am a parent, really has nothing to do with that child as a human being. I don't judge my child the way I judge a friend. I don't interact with my child the way I would interact with my friend because I haven't chosen my child. My child has come out of my body, flesh of my flesh, my genetics, or I have adopted that child, raised that child. It's a very unequal relationship. So one way that the Nevi'im describe our relationship with God is as a parent-child. God's love for us is unconditional. That's a really good thing, because if that love for us wasn't unconditional, we'd be dead where we stand. Okay? One of my first teachers pointed out that the core root of the word rachamim, of mercy, is rechem, which is a womb, a uterus, because when an embryo forms in a womb, the womb doesn't make a judgment call whether that embryo is going to end up being Moshe Rabbeinu or Hitler, yimach shemo. That womb accepts that embryo without judgment. That's what mercy is. Mercy is an acceptance without judgment. And even objective evidence to the contrary, there's still acceptance. By contrast, when two people marry, whether they choose each other or whether the society chooses them, you know, for one another, there's still, even in all of the societies when there's inequities between the spouses, we're still fundamentally dealing with a relationship where there's somewhat of a partnership. You're dealing with two individuals, even if they don't necessarily have equal rights or where they don't have the same role, you're fundamentally dealing with two adults, two partners, two people who are engaged in running the household, raising the children, putting food on the table, whatever it is. And certainly in a Jewish home, and I always point out to my students that Judaism, contrary to what our perception very often is the religion where the woman's rights are most protected out of any of the world religions. Judaism is a religion which really sees the relationship between the husband and wife as a holy partnership, which is why we refer to the marriage ceremony as kiddushin. It's something that's holy, it's something that's special, it's sacred. So when the Nevi'im refer to our relationship with God as a spousal relationship, most typically with God being the husband and B'nai Yisrael being the wife, there's an assumption